Breathe. Just breathe.
Daddy, when do I get my lightsaber?
Now reach out.
Oh, here's one.
Ow! That was my hand!
But you said reach out.
Hey, guys, what are you doing?
Josh!
Hey, what's this?
No, don't touch that! Oh, my other one!
It's okay, Daddy. Breathe. Just breathe. Welcome to the conversation.
Welcome to Skinless. Dun 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 da da dun da da dun 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 da da dun da da dun.
Welcome to the podcast. We are so excited this week to talk about one of the biggest movies of the year, Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Are we supposed to keep the episode names in there anymore, or is it just The Last Jedi? I'm not even sure.
I believe Disney is dumping the episode 14.
They're just dropping them entirely?
Yep.
For an episode this big, we are so excited to have a couple of great people on. As always, I am so excited to have film analyst and the true Last Jedi, Chris Utley. Welcome, Chris.
That's a little bit too much, Last Jedi. Come on now. The last. But I appreciate the love.
Also, in the other corner is the Sith Lord of the Dance, Patrick Erskine. Welcome back, Patrick.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Sith Lord of the Dance, that's something I'd love to see, man.
Well, with JJ taking over episode 9, it's very possible that that will be in there at in some capacity.
Oh, yeah. Anything goes with JJ.
Of course, The Last Jedi is the next chapter and the penultimate chapter, supposedly, of the Skywalker saga. It sees the return of Luke Skywalker as a aging reclusive Jedi, as Rey, the up-and-comer, asks him to train her. Meanwhile, the remains of the resistance.
If you want to get technical, and here's your spoiler warning, she's not necessarily asking him to train her. He's asking him to get off his butt and get back in the fight because the resistance needs him.
That is true. This is probably a good place to remind everybody that, yes, there are spoilers going to be galore.
Massive, epic, huge one.
These are massive spoilers. We're just going to get right into it. Now, The Last Jedi, guys, is one of the second largest opening of all time, I believe. It might be third, but 200...
It's second.
Second? It came in higher than the Avengers?
Yeah, that's my analyst work play here. Yeah, $220.09 million.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah, $220.9. I'm sorry, I got the number wrong. So... second largest domestic opening of all time behind Star Wars The Force Awakens 2 years ago.
Now, here's the interesting thing, guys. This is actually proven to be arguably the most divisive of the films. It's interesting. The audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, and you can say what you will about Rotten Tomatoes, the difference between the critic score and the audience score on this one is nuts. The critic score is somewhere around 92-93%. And the audience score is somewhere hovering around 59%. It's one of the largest gaps between the two in Rotten Tomatoes history. So much so
that it was accused in the news recently that maybe Russian bots were somehow jacking down the scores, so to speak. And Rotten Tomatoes had to come out and issue a statement to refute that.
Oh, man.
It's true.
I wish I was lying.
So, guys, I'm dying to hear what you thought, and why do you think it's so divisive?
All right, we should lead this one off then.
Who? Well, you asked the question.
Patrick,
so
take it.
There you go.
I'll talk for an hour. Patrick, take it.
So, for a Star Wars movie, I actually didn't know what was going to happen next. Yeah. And I think that was probably one of the strongest things going for it, was that they were really good at, like, at the suspense portion, and I guessed a million times as to what was happening at any given moment, and I was usually kind of off as to what was happening. So I think it was really suspenseful for a Star Wars movie, and usually sci-fi isn't the type of movie to keep me guessing and keep me on the edge of my seat. But they were really successful in that. And I don't know, man. I actually kind of enjoy seeing all the hate that that Star Wars is getting. Because I feel like it prevents a lot of people from, like, I don't know, just experiencing and enjoying a movie without, like, complaining about the sci-fi violence or their interpretation of how things should work. But
I have so many responses I want to say to that, but I want to let Chris have a go first because there are so many things I think that you said that are on point. But Chris, what'd you think?
I love the film. I loved it very much, and I still do. Number one thing that I love about it was that director Rian Johnson was able to do the one thing that fanboys have been complaining about all this time. All this talk about how Force Awakens was New Hope 2.0 and everything is a retread and everything is all the same. They wanted something new. They wanted something original to push the series forward. And Rian Johnson said, okay, I'll give you original. And boy, did he give it to us. We went in expecting Empire Strikes Back 2.0. What we got was something way, way different and not nearly on anyone's radar. And I was so happy with the choices that were made. I hadn't been this giddy on the edge of my seat wondering what's going to happen next in a Star Wars movie since I was a kid. So I got that good little full bucket of popcorn, full bucket of soda feeling. What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? What's going to happen now? And just in terms of sheer excitement and surprise and wonder, it checked all those boxes for me, for sure. And I'm not ashamed to say it.
My experience was a little different. It was rare for me. I came out of the film, and I honestly didn't know what I thought. And that doesn't mean that I didn't like it, because I knew I did like it. On like there were some things about it that I thought that were just so well done, and I thought the film itself was well done. I agree with you guys. You know, Chris, say you were on the edge of your seat. I was on the edge of my seat because I also agree with Pat in that I honestly didn't know what was going to happen. Rian Johnson came in and he literally sort of threw out the playbook. And,
great.
And yeah, it was wonderful. It was really great for that. But it was funny because Force Awakens, you came out of there and it was Force Awakens felt like a popcorn movie to me. Because Force Awakens, you come into Force Awakens, and it's like, what a rush. Oh, we're, you know, here we go. We're
great. A Star Wars sequel that doesn't suck. Awesome. Move on to the next one.
Well, that's the thing. It took me a while to realize that I think that this was the best script. You could argue about Empires as well and say, you know, maybe Empire had a better script. And I really feel like, of all the Star Wars films I've seen, this might be the best and most intelligent script. And this is going to sound terrible if I say this, but I honestly think that's why people don't like it. Not because it's intelligent, because I don't think that's not what I'm saying, but because the script was trying to say something about our modern day culture.
The script was trying to say a whole lot.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm in full agreement with you there.
Yeah, and I mean, I know that every film's a product of its culture, but I mean, when you think about the other movies, there aren't a lot of them that you feel like, man, this movie was really trying to say something. I read an article, and it was I actually thought it was a really interesting way to look at it. One of the things they said was, the problem with the film, to most people, may be that there was too much reality in it. And I sort of understood what they meant.
I do understand.
What do you think about that?
Usually say this big gun from the middle of the podcast, but let's just go marching into the fray. Kylo Ren did the Hallmark statement line to me, pretty much. That's one of my 2018 mantras. Let the past die. When he said that statement, that thing about it gives me goosebumps and chill bumps all over my arm. And because when you think about it, tying us back to who we are as Christians, as Christ followers, Paul in the book of Philippians, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, Philippians 3, dictates that in terms of his particular mission to try to follow Christ on the level that he wants to follow Christ, that it's going to require forgetting those things which are behind and moving forward to what's in front of us. And Paul makes that as a statement. And that's what this film did, and that's where the divisive nature is stemming from. Because, I mean, come on, we're going into episode 9 at the end of this puppy. There is no Han Solo. Sadly and tragically, there is no Princess Leia. And if we see Luke, he's going to be force ghosted in a scene or two. The past that we know is dead. All we've got is Chewbacca, R2-D2, and C-3PO to hang on to. We might see a force ghosted Yoda in there, maybe, because JJ will go there later on that. But, the past is gone. And the Star Wars of our past that we cling to, that we cling so hard to, that we love so much, started off with those three characters, Luke, Han, and Leia. And they're all gone now. So, with all the talk about break childhoods and that mantra that came from George Lucas doing the prequels, and they're echoing it again in message boards, talkback, social medias, whatever, like that's what they're grieving. A piece of their childhood is gone because the three singular heroes of that childhood from 1977 through 1983 are now out of the picture. And so we're stepping into a brand new arena as a result of Rian Johnson's work, and the people just can't deal. Simple as that. They just cannot deal with the fact that we waited 30 years. We never thought we would see our heroes together again, and now they're here, and now they're gone. But that's the way that it is in society. The heroes that we love and adore so much don't oftentimes live to see the end result of the battle. As a black man, I think about Martin Luther King. He never lived to see a Barack Obama become president. I'm a father of three kids, and what I hold in my heart all the time is the fact that I lost my father at 12 years old. I look at my kids, and there's days I get misty-eyed because they will never get to see their grandfather. They will hear stories, they see a picture or two, but he will never get to experience them. And that's reality. Past gotta die, and sometimes our heroes fall and don't make it to the end of the journey. And that's just real, and the film captured that.
It's sad that the heroes, I mean, you hear people say, never meet your heroes, and that's one of the things one of the big divisive things here is the way that Luke's portrayed in the film. But I think it's just as much also about tone, too, because the tone of this film sort of gives you the Star Wars tropes and then takes them away. You know, like you said, you think of it as setting up Empire 2.0, but at the same time, you know, when you think it's going to go there, like what happens to Snoke, you know, Snoke's obviously going to be the new emperor, right? You know, he's going to take us there, and then he goes out like a chump.
That's an episode 9 expectation. You're expecting his demise and climax of episode 9.
Yeah.
Just was not expecting that in the middle of this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that pretty much knocked me out of the floor of the theater.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, what?
I don't know, man. I thought people were complaining about how unrealistic it was, about how bombs couldn't fall out of space and land onto a ship and blow it up.
So, what? I don't know. You've heard that?
Yeah. Okay, so
really?
I thought the same thing. I thought the same thing when I watched the movies, to be honest. But, like, it's crazy how many people are hung up on space science and, like, realism in a movie that is, like, about, you know, like, flying spaceships in space and shooting down aliens. And, like, it's just, it's
basically rock float.
Yeah, like, it's you can make up the rules, man. It's science fiction. You can do whatever you want. There was, like, a 15-minute video. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, this conservative guy, Ben Shapiro. He had, like, a 15-minute, like, rant on everything that he hated about Star Wars. I don't know why, like, hate deserves that much time.
I've seen that video myself and two of our Green Fist colleagues, well, three of them, J. Allen Scherer, Heather Johnson, and Arnaldo Reyes have our own little Star Wars spoiler room. So yeah. Before the rest of Screenfish saw it, we've been on there and posting all the craziness and when that video got posted. So I watched 30 seconds of it and was like, I can't do this.
Yeah, it's just like, I mean, that's why I really don't think there's a consensus. I mean, I didn't see much realism. I saw some messages that were like trying to be force fed throughout the movie. That maybe didn't land super well and might have been completely missed. I feel like they were ineffective and therefore like not super realistic. I don't think it was a problem with the realism that people didn't like it. I think it was that it bucked their expectations, and that's why I feel like they just don't know what they want. Like Chris was saying, you make a movie that's a carbon copy of the original and people complain, and then you make a movie that's completely original and does everything you don't expect and people complain. So I don't really know what people are going for. I think I heard another person rant about that beginning scene when Rey hands the lightsaber over to Luke, and Luke looks at it and like we think it's gonna be this really cool moment, and then he just chucks it over.
I love that. I love that so much.
I thought it was great. And one guy who hated that said it was just a middle finger to the fans because they were like, there was all this build up and climax to this great scene, and then he just throws it away. I'm like, That's awesome. I love that you can do that. That, like, you can take what everybody thinks is going to happen, and even wants to happen, and just say, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to write the story my own way. And Luke's going to be a different person. That's actually the question I had for you guys, is, like, one of the major critiques was that that Luke wasn't written very well, or he wasn't, like, the way he was supposed to be. Can you give me any insight to, like, why people think that, or like what the expectation of Luke was versus
I got this one.
Go for it.
The last time you saw Luke Skywalker before he turns his crown on that island and uncloaks the thing off his head, his robe or whatever, you saw him triumphant in victory, master of the Force, taking down the Emperor with Daddy's help, restoring Daddy's heart to good, and setting aflame of Vader's old body in the Ewokian celebration with our three heroes and the droids and Lando Calrissian gazing at the Force-ghosted images of Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Yoda. And they all lived happily ever after. That's the Luke Skywalker sitting in people's heart.
Yeah.
They wanted that dude back. But they wanted to... Your friend was looking for the moment where you had found my saber. I tossed it out there, wondering if there was someone worthy enough to find it and bring it to me. You are the one, Rey. We must begin your training. And then it was supposed to be 2 hours of Luke showing her all the ways of the Force, and then the two of them together just laying down AT-ATs and Imperial walkers and making rocks float, spaceship bounce, and then just ripping everybody to shreds. That's what they wanted.
Yeah.
They wanted Luke their hero. They wanted Luke their savior. But what they got, and I pointed this out in my review on Screenfish, was they got someone who was weary of the heroic road. Because again, not only do your heroes die, heroes got to take some costs, got to carry some weight for the stuff that they do. So, I mean, add all the stuff that he went through. I mean, parents... pretty much an orphan for all intents and purposes, and mom's gone, dad's gone, sent to live with his uncle and aunt, just begging to get the Tosche Station in for his power converters, and one day he wants to go to flight school, and then all of a sudden here comes the Galactic Empire, and now he gets thrust into this big massive war, and through his flight skills he takes down the Death Star, finds out Darth Vader is his dad, finds out Leia is his sister, and all of this grandiose stuff. And then he goes in the movie that we don't see, which is the other reason why they're mad, to try to build up the brand new generation of Jedi, and ends up falling flat on his face due to the scene with Kylo Ren. So the Luke that we get is a broken man. The Luke that we get is a man of sorrow and regret, and not the hero that we were asking for, because heroism has a cost. Heroism takes a toll. Those of us who are mature enough to kind of go to hell and back a few times. Get it? Can't speak for those who are still on the cusp of discovery of life and haven't really gone through that yet. So that might be a generation gap thing, the more that I think about it.
Well, you know, one of the things I've been thinking too, and this Disney has no control over this, is cultural climate. Because a couple of things, like first of all, when New Hope came out, the reason it's called A New Hope, it's coming out at the time just to fall, just post Vietnam War. Like this is
post Nixon.
Yeah, post Nixon. So the idea of this new upstart who is standing up to the man, if you will, and takes down the evil that is everywhere, comes right out of the culture in the moment. And if you think about the cultural climate this year, you know, you're not actually getting that different a tone. Like, you want to talk about fallen heroes. Like, how many, since Weinstein, look, every new day, it's a new name being thrown in as we find that somebody we've looked up to has been involved or done things that they shouldn't have, obviously. We're in a time this year having, with the presidency the way that it has been, the general culture in the U.S. has just had this feeling of negativity and heaviness. And then you bring in Luke Skywalker, the savior of the 70s.
Uh-huh.
And he's a jerk. All of a sudden, he's that fallen hero. He's the next guy that you looked up to that isn't who you want him to be. And yeah, heroism does. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought the choice was just incredible, and it was such a great character arc to watch Luke sort of go in a way that I didn't expect. In some ways, Luke was Yoda-like, and people only think, now they think of Yoda in the prequels, but when you look at Yoda in Empire, he's very cynical. You know, he's very cynical, and he's funny. Now, he's not as cynical as Yoda.
He doesn't want to train Luke.
Yeah, he doesn't.
Like, Luke doesn't want to train.
Exactly. That's why I think it was so wonderful to have Yoda back, because it made sense. Like, it was, Yoda was the one that he was the most like in that time. But, I mean, you look at the way thing, you just look at the way that the culture is right now, and I think everybody was looking forward to a, quote, safe movie. Like, see, 2 years ago, they weren't looking for safe, but they got it and they loved it. So now they were looking for another safe movie.
Safe with Han Solo dying. It ain't that safe.
It's true, but the movie itself fit the tone of so many of the other movies. And let's not forget that when Empire came out, people hated it then too. You know, it wasn't until like the early 90s, arguably even when Clerks came out, that people started talking about Empire as the best one. It made the least amount of money of the originals. And for 20 years, people, I mean, everybody loved the twist, but everybody's like, oh, it's too dark. And even as a kid, when I would watch it, I would fast forward it because I was bored. It wasn't until I was in my late teens, early 20s that I was like, well, wait, this is actually really good. This is great, really, really well written. So it's hard to see your heroes not meet your expectations.
Yeah, I think that there's another hypocrisy there, though, in what people expect, because I feel like they're given everything they asked for and they still don't want it, because, yeah, sure, Luke is like a flawed hero now, but people are now also complaining that Rey is a Mary Sue and, like, the perfect hero and not flawed and has no conflict and is too powerful all at once. Like, they're really picky and choosy about where they get their, like, perfect heroes from.
Yeah.
Not willing to accept it from somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I don't know how you can have that same expectation. I mean, I think they can get it because it's a childhood thing. Again, it's nostalgia. But it seems a little bit hypocritical to say, like, oh, I want that perfect hero in Luke, and I'm getting it in Rey, and that sucks, and I don't want that.
Well, you know, let's talk about Rey for a minute there, because of course, the big reveal about Rey is the non-reveal about Rey. You know, everybody was waiting to hear their last name is Kenobi or Skywalker.
Yeah.
Or Solo.
Or Solo, which, let's be serious, JJ's going to change it, and it's going to... JJ's going to make...
Stop.
I have no faith. I have no faith. that he's not going to get panicky. Yeah, but what do you guys think about that? What does it mean to be a nobody? How significant is that to story or just to her character?
The big non-reveal, I think, was pretty amazing. If that's indeed the case, I can't speak for what J.J. Abrams decides to do or undo in the next episode, but...
Oh, God. I have a thought.
Yeah, I really hope he just leaves it, and he's like, he just leaves her from nobody. I mean, they've reinforced the idea that she's actually from nowhere a couple of times when she first says to Luke, I'm from Jakku, and he's like, oh, yeah, that actually is nowhere. And then... again, it is. I don't know if it was meant to be funny, but when Kylo Ren was like, "You're nothing. You're nobody. To nobody. Like you're just a nobody," and even the way he said it kind of made me laugh. But I think there's way more power to a story that talks about a nobody doing something extraordinary than there is about someone who was born extraordinary and like meant to do extraordinary things, and everybody knew they were going to do extraordinary things. I think it speaks to a wider audience. If it tells you that, like, oh, yeah, you're just a normal person, but you're capable of extraordinary things, and even standing up to extraordinary evil and being an extraordinary, powerful person. So the fact that she's a nobody from nowhere actually makes it a way better story and way more compelling to me, and I really hope that they keep that intact in the next episode.
Chris,
do you don't have any confidence in JJ to keep that. I wish I did, but I don't.
I mean, do they just make it up as they go along? Don't they have, like,
yes.
Like conference or something, like they agree, okay, this is what the arc's gonna be, and we're all gonna lead up
not
to this
for the entire series.
Oh,
it's okay. One movie at a time. It's not like Marvel and the Kevin Feige thing.
Shoot, I don't like that. It's kind of like, it's almost like political then, and it's like, all right, I'm just gonna come in and undo everything the person did before. And then the next person comes in and like, okay, now it's my job to undo everything that they did. And then it just keeps going in this horrible cycle and makes a horrible story.
Well, that's the irony of this is Rian Johnson said, I had a complete free hand and it was the most wonderful experience because they had no arc and he had no notes that he had to hit.
It's not like Marvel across the hall on the Disney campus where they plan these things out and then they shoot the movies. They're doing these one story arc at a time. Which is what got Colin Trevorrow fired from episode 9. Because they kept trying to do rewrites on episode 9 and none of it just worked. So they just heave-hauled him after his movie, The Book of Henry, did a face dive into cement. So God only knows what JJ is going to do. And he totally would do that just to try to link it in because my issue with JJ Abrams anyway is I call him a remix map.
Yeah, he's the nostalgia king.
That he takes tropes and stuff in from genres back in the day, packages it up into a tiny-looking brand-new thing. It looks brand-new, but it's the same old thing. It's cute. You enjoy it. It's like it's the equivalent of somebody digging up old Michael Jackson and Prince unreleased music, taking their vocals, putting a brand new beat on them, and then creating a Michael Jackson Prince duet. So you like it, you'll dance to it, it might become a number one hit, but it doesn't last. It doesn't hold any weight. And my fear is that they'll end up doing that with Rey by backpedaling and saying that Kylo Ren only said that the trick you do is who your parents really are, which will denigrate everything that Yoda was trying to say when the Jedi tree was destroyed. And the whole point of what Yoda was saying is that the Jedi pretty much had been in their own minds the sole keepers of the Force, but that's not the case. And much like how God operates in our lives, there's no elitist within the kingdom of God who has a special access to the power of the Holy Spirit. It's available to everybody. And what they presented with the revelation that Rey allegedly comes from nobody and the kid at the end is now you have a true living, breathing force who truly is available to anyone. And you don't need all that Uber training. You don't need a high midichlorian count. Thank you, Rian Johnson, for canceling that argument once and for all. Force is available to everyone.
just like the word of God, whosoever will, let him come. If you want it, you got it. And it'll be interesting to see where, to see if JJ builds up on that. I don't know. Just like Steve, I don't know. But hopefully he does.
Well, there are three things that he could do. One of them I think he has to. Two of them I'm afraid he will. The thing he has to do is I think that people are going to come from all corners of the galaxy to help take down, you know, the First Order, because there's nobody left. So they're going to, you know, and now we know that everybody else out there is getting they've got the word out. And that's fine, as long as it doesn't go all Matrix Revolutions on us. That's fine. The two I'm afraid he's going to do is switch Rey's background, because like you guys, I think it's far more powerful to actually make or allow the belief that, my gosh, the universe is bigger than the Skywalker family. Other people outside this story matter as well. Like, that's powerful. Like you're saying with Chris, like you were saying, you know, God makes his spirit available to anybody. And this idea that it's not just this enclosed narrative, the universe just got really, really big. Now, that's why I don't understand what people are reacting strongly to. The other thing I'm afraid of is that we're going to find out Snoke isn't dead, and that he was Darth Plagueis the whole time, and he can cheat death anytime he wants to, and uh-oh, he's back.
Lame.
That's why I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but if the fans complain enough, I'm afraid that, you know, it's just going to be, okay, well, let's just come back with something that they're more used to.
If he does those last two choices, particularly the Snoke one, you pretty much just canceled out and snuffed out everything that RJ established in Episode 8. It's like, Disney's pretty much, if Disney let him do that, they're saying, okay, mulligan on Episode 8, here's the one that you're looking for. And when you look at it as a package 10, 20 years down the road, it's just going to feel so foul and so disjointed.
Mm.
I think that's going to happen anyway. I mean, it's probably a tit for tat. Like, Rian Johnson did the same thing with Episode 8 and Episode 7. Like, if you think about it, Episode 7 was kind of inconsequential by the time Episode 8 came around. Like, nothing really had changed. And then Rian Johnson just kind of undid a lot of the stuff that JJ did. So I would not put it past JJ to just re-undo everything. That's what happens when you don't have a plan, man. You just gotta write this stuff down, collaborate, talk to each other, like, learn from Marvel. They're doing well.
Marvel makes movies? I hadn't heard.
But, like, there's a reason they're consistent. They're all on the same page and not making it up as they go.
Yeah. This movie worked, but maybe that's part of the reason they keep firing all their directors. You know? They're hiring people that have a vision, but they're still uncomfortable with it, so they let them go? I don't know.
Again, getting back to Trevorrow, when you go back and look at Jurassic World, kind of was a good thing he got bumped off of Episode 9, because Trevorrow is not a visionary, and I think Book of Henry pretty much spoke to that one. I didn't see the movie, but that Rotten Tomato score and all the press coming out of that pretty much told you everything you need to know about his visionary capabilities, and even Jurassic World, which was a paint by numbers, insert the right beats here. This is when the dinosaur roars. This is when they run. This is when they do the big rescue. Let's get the annoying damsel in distress who's forced to be a heroine, you know, and let's give them the Rock'em Sock'em ending with the dinosaur fight. And personally, I think all that money Jurassic World made was because of the dinosaur fights at the end of the movie. Because Spielberg and any other directors did dinosaur mano-a-mano on that look, you know, where they made it popcorn fun.
Right.
So that's why he got that gig, but now he's gone, and Mixmaster JJ got him again. Don't know what he's going to do. Hopefully he's making his list and checking it twice with Kathleen Kennedy.
I want to go back a little bit to talking about dealing with the past. That was something I think we've sort of brought up here, talking about Luke. But you guys have already said that was a key theme in this movie. But is there a difference between running from the past and dealing with the past? Because it seems to be going on in some way within the film.
I mean, I think there was a little bit of a contrast in how Kylo dealt with it. and how Luke eventually dealt with it under the guidance of Yoda. There's you can lean into it and learn from the past, or you can just burn it and destroy it and forget it. But then, do you really learn from it if you're just doing that? I mean, Kylo Ren was about to do that same thing under his own advice. Burn the past, forget it. He was going to try and kill Luke. Luke's quote, if you kill me, you'll carry me with you forever, just like your father. I mean, he's not learning from the past. He's just making it worse. And that's the result of him just trying to burn it and forget it and destroy it, not letting it define him. I think there's a kind of tension between moving on, but also not entirely forgetting the past, because the past kind of makes up who you are. Yeah, so I think there is a difference, and I think the Yoda idea of failure is the best teacher is probably one of the strongest lessons, the strongest theme of the movie.
You know, I love to see the Yoda cameo, not just because I love to see Yoda or that it was puppet Yoda, which, you know, brought warmth to my heart. That's not just because of that, but I think he was so necessary to the film. I think that's interesting. Even the idea that he torches the tree. It was almost like, the books don't matter. You know, I love the line. Did anybody else pick up the lines? Oh, it's all about the sacred text. You've read them, have you? And he goes, well, I...
I caught that.
I love that. He didn't even know what it really was or really what was the story. And don't even get me started on the significance of that as a pastor. But
go there, please. Christmas
sight. Of so many of the people that argue for on the point of the scriptures, but don't actually know what it says when they make the argument. You talk about that stuff anyway.
That's what I live for.
But so Yoda just torches it. He sets them on fire. He's like, it's, you know, who cares? Who cares about the books?
Spoiler alert! Once again, no, he didn't. Because when you go back and see it again, right before Rey goes and has her googly-eyed moment with Paul Dameron, with Leia, the books are in the cubbyhole on the Millennium Falcon.
Really?
So they're not destroyed. Yep. And Rian Johnson confirmed, I saw this morning during my entertainment news roundup. Yep, Rey grabbed the books from the tree because I guess when in her vision, the voices that she was hearing called her to the tree to grab the books. So Yoda already knew they were gone.
I didn't realize that either. So Luke didn't know. So Luke was trying to set fire to him, but he had no idea that they were gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. When you watch it again, when right before the climax, you'll see the texts are sitting there, and then she closes them up in one of the little compartments on the Falcon.
Well, that's interesting too. So there was some preservation there of the past as well.
Which is exactly what we're talking about here. Is that you can't let the past die, but you still got to cling on hope, you know. You can't live in the past as though the past has broken you, beaten you up, and defeated you, which is what Kylo Ren's doing. When you look at his story, mom and dad and their issues and this, that, and the other, being sent off away from your mom to go to do this training with your uncle, and then your uncle tries to kill you because he senses you're evil, and all that rejection, and rejection. And you need to get back to another point and how the only person who was able to get through and connect and to see what's going on is Rey. And so in that moment where Snoke meets his demise, and that awesome scene where they finally come together, strength on strength, power to power combined, and take out some guards. And Kylo's all, you know, let's destroy it all. Let's destroy the Jedi. Let's destroy the Sith. That made me bounce up out of my seat when he included the Sith in that list. Let's destroy the First Order, the Resistance. Let's destroy it all. And create a whole new galaxy, and the two of us just gonna run it. Yeah, that's what a lot of people want to do with their past. They're so broken and they're so beaten up and they're so defeated by what they've gone through. And they're scratching lotto tickets and they're up in Las Vegas throwing money in casinos, hoping for the one great thing that they're able to find which they can just lay fire to the past and just start their whole new entity, their whole new world, their whole new thing. That's what they're really looking for. From these riches, from the success, from all of that. They're running from their past and trying to bury it instead of learning how to look to the past and move forward with hope to say, this is what I've come through. This is what I lived through, but I survived. And I'm still here, and I'm still going to be here, which is the real power in the climactic scene in the film when Luke goes out to confront Kylo Ren. He steps out of that little hangar, and he's walking. I can't lie. I was at the top of, I was going to yell in the theater at the top of my lungs and say, yeah, this is the moment that everybody has been waiting for, guys. And then Kylo just unleashes his whole forces, and then Luke doesn't go down, and he's still standing. Oh, we went nuts in the theater. It was like Luke had experienced that. He embraced his failure, and then he went out there, or a portion of him went out there, so to speak, and he went in to confront. And the way that he did it was very, very Bruce Lee into the dragon. He started fighting without fighting. And I thought that was neat.
Hmm. Oh, that scene, I love that scene so much. I had somebody say to me recently saying, I knew he wasn't there because he was okay after the laser blast. I'm like, you didn't know.
I'm lying. Can we talk about the waste of characters? I think that was
I presume you would be talking about Finn and Rose.
Finn, Rose, Snoke, DJ, Phasma, like every one of those characters had potential.
I wouldn't say Snoke so much, but okay.
Well, I feel like Snoke actually didn't have an opportunity to do anything super meaningful. He was big and like had a cool voice, but I feel like he had potential, and I guess now he's gone unless he's revived, which after that whole Leia scene, I feel like anything's possible. I feel like none of those characters actually lived up to their potential. Specifically, like the whole Finn Rose like side story to Canto Bight. I don't know why that happened.
Can you please explain why it is she fell in love with him and kissed him?
Yeah. Okay. I was out for that. I mean, I was like, all right, that was a bit much.
Yeah. Price is Right horns for them.
she thought she was gonna die. She had the chance to kiss like a Jedi, not a Jedi, but like a hero. I don't know. If I was in her position, I might do the same thing. Opportunistic, I think.
The line was good, but the emotional weight of it was totally lost. Because it was said that RJ's original cut was 3 hours long. Uh-huh. The stuff that he cut might have been their bonding sequences sitting in that jail or something.
Oh, man.
They got intimately close to each other.
If they
cut DJ to bail them out.
There was already way too much of that in the movie. I feel like if you remove that entire part of the movie, maybe would have been too short, but it would have been way more tight, because I feel, again, like it was kind of inconsequential. Like, there was probably a lot easier ways to get DJ into the mix. However, he's going to be used in the future. If he doesn't come back, that's another waste, too, because I think he's got potential as well. But they invested really heavily into what I guess might have been some sort of, like, political message or something.
Well, yeah.
The whole notion of them being on Canto Bight was they made their money off of dealing with weaponry, and they do their money on their version of whatever those were that were supposed to be horses. But the kids who were captive, including the ones at the very end of the movie, it was their job to steward and take care of those animals. Because, I mean, I don't think it's an accident that he goes back to that planet and to that kid at the end of the movie. I think he might have been doing some sort of foreshadowing. It may be a little time jump in episode 9, and that kid who's staring at the stars will be 15 years old, however many years later, and ready to fight alongside Rey for all we know. But I really didn't have too many problems with that particular scene. It's just that the emotional depth of it all just was not there. It's like, yeah, you're going to this planet to look for a code breaker, and somehow they're together, and Finn and Rose are together, but it's that was okay, you know. I'm in agreement with Patrick that that's the piece that didn't work.
Yeah, I felt like there were, ironically, I felt like there were almost as many wasted characters as this one as there were in Force Awakens. Like, Phasma at least got a fight scene, but we still don't really know or care about her. And in some ways, you know, like, you bring in a character like Rose, and you've got a lot to go there. And I mean, if I'm correct, she doesn't die, right? So they can, they're, you're potentially bringing her back in the next thing. But I think Canto Bight was really just about expanding the universe again and having, in really, it was more about it bringing in kids, I think.
Let's go another planet.
Yeah. Yeah, we need something, because right now it's all about Kylo Ren talking with Rey. And please, someone on the internet, please take those scenes and intercut them with Drake Hotline Bling in the background. Would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
What?
You should call me on your force tone. No, he'll be singing it now because he tried to holler at her and then she flies away in the Falcon.
That's
just
right.
Shuts the door. So maybe that's episode 8.5. I know when the force line blinks. That could only mean one thing.
I see what you mean by the wasted characters. I think that was just to keep people entertained with some more intense sequences. Did anybody else feel like BB-8 got jacked up, like he was on roids or something on this movie? Like, not a major plot point, but I was like, holy cow.
But I thought that was cute that he was piling the AT-AT during the, what you call it.
Yeah, I'm happy with the screen time he got. He was fun. And I feel like they take a lot of liberties because you actually don't know how anything works in Star Wars. Like, you don't know how the Force works. You don't know how these droids work. So, theoretically, they can do whatever they want. They have a blank check to make BB-8 do anything. Same with the Force. Like, there's no definitive, like, limitations on even how it works. So they're like, we want to make it do this? We'll make it do this.
Is there something that you can think of that worked for you and something that you thought maybe didn't?
Like, I already talked about so much that did work, and the only thing that did work for me was the scenes on Canto Bight and then Rose's kiss. That was the number one.
Yeah, for me, the things that worked was the script. The storyline being very unpredictable was amazing. I think saved the movie from just being really blah. Man, that Rey and Kylo Ren scene was, like, phenomenal. I think, like, the high point in the movie was when she caught the lightsaber. Oh, man. That might have been one of my favorite movie moments in, like, of the year. But that was awesome. Shout out to the Porgs, too. They were great. I know they're just in there for sales. Well, apparently, I don't know if this is true, but I heard a rumor that on the island that they filmed on, there were penguins, and instead of editing them out, they just made them into Porgs.
Really?
Yeah, I read this. I don't know if it's true. I want it to be true, so I choose to believe it. Puffins? Okay, so Ellie says they were puffins. Maybe I misread. They just didn't want to edit them out, so they turned them into Porgs, and then they're like, yo, we could sell these. So they made them super cute. Yeah, the script was amazing. That fight scene was amazing. The things that didn't work was that entire Canto Bight sequence. It wasn't bad. I just, when I thought about it, I was like, well, you could have removed this whole thing, probably done a 5-minute scene, and you could have gotten to the same point. So it just seemed extra and not really beneficial. I also still think Kylo Ren is a lame villain. I don't think he's intimidating, or I don't think he's a threat, or, like, there's no one powerful left unless Snoke suddenly comes back to life, which I'm getting more and more convinced he is, because right now, who's scary? Like, that Weasley little captain? What's his face?
Hux.
Yeah. There's nobody left that actually scares you anymore. So unless they're just going to, like, bring in someone completely new, I don't know, Kylo Ren doesn't really do anything for me either. I mean, other than him potentially teaming up with Rey. That's all I got. Kylo Ren is lame. Porgs are great.
I'm shocked that neither of you mentioned, you know, Super Leia, as that was the key scene that I went, I didn't need it.
I convinced myself it didn't happen.
I mean, they could have blown a hole in the wall and had her just be injured. I know that they're trying. I understand that in episode 9 she was supposed to be using more force powers and it was supposed to be more visible, which obviously they can't do now. But I didn't like that scene. But there was a lot that worked for me in this. I really liked the relationship between Hux and Kylo Ren in this one. They sort of tried to flesh him out at least a little bit better, almost like the competing brother angle. You know, Jacob and Esau, if you will, except they're both jerks. I guess Jacob and Esau are both jerks.
Oh, that to me, Hux is nothing more than a glorified Grandma Tarkin.
I guess he is. Oh, I thought you said Grandma Tarkin. But Grand Moff, right.
Grand Moff Tarkin.
You know, Mark Hamill may not have liked Luke's arc, but I absolutely was enthralled by it because it was such a divergent path from what we expected, and that's what I wanted. You know, when he tosses the lightsaber over his shoulder, you're just like, wait a minute, that, what? Yeah. You know, we've talked about it. I have a feeling we know which way this is going, guys, but let's do screen it or skip it. The Last Jedi, screen it or skip it.
I say screen it, man. I actually feel like I enjoyed this. I had the potential to enjoy this movie way more than a lot of like extreme diehard Star Wars fans. Because if it didn't stay true to canon, or if it kind of got some things wrong, I didn't really care. I just wanted to see a fun sci-fi movie. And I have enough attachment to the series to appreciate the good moments as well. And I don't know, I think people are getting a little bit bogged down by nostalgia. I think they're like, if they didn't like it, it's because it's not what they wanted from their childhood. And the movie did a good job of trying to encourage people to not cling to the past. And to not lean too heavily on like what you expect to happen and what you think should happen. So, I mean, I thought it was a great movie. It had amazing Star Wars moments. It was really well told. Surprisingly great story for like a sci-fi space drama. I'd actually see it again. Actually, I saw it 1 3/4 times because the first time I saw it, when they were on the mineral planet, there was a popcorn fire and we all had to evacuate. So I didn't get to see like the crazy climax, and like we had to go back the next day, so that was really, really tough. And I was kind of annoyed that I had to watch like 3/4 of it just to see the end all over again. But it was just as enjoyable the second time around. So I really liked it. I liked the last one too. They were fun. And if you hate it, honestly, get over it. Take yourself less seriously and just enjoy the movie, man.
Star Wars: The Last Jedi is the third best one in the series. I would say New Hope. Then Empire Strikes Back, then Last Jedi, everything else beneath this one. Screen it multiple times because there's subtleties and nuances that you're not going to catch on first viewing. And for the haters, I would say screen it again in 5 to 10 years. I mean, if you're 25, 26, you know, 30 years old, and right at that beginning of life, kind of go through your Joni Mitchell thing and live life from both sides now, I would say, then go back and revisit the film, and I think you'll get a better understanding of where Rian Johnson was trying to go with it. So definitely screen it, and then screen it again a few years later, and you'll catch the beauty.
I'm so glad you said that. That was exactly how I felt about it. I actually said to Alicia when I came home, I said, you know, I wasn't pumping my fist like I was when I came out of Force Awakens, but I feel like the more I watch this may become my favorite one. And I think that there will be a lot more love for it in 5 to 10 years than even that there is now. Not just because of the critics are really enjoying this one, but I think that when people distance themselves from it a little bit and come back, they're going to see how good this one is. It's a definite screen it for me. Screen it in IMAX.
Definitely IMAX, definitely Dolby, definitely the biggest screen you can find, which won't be too hard because that was Disney's distribution terms. So from now to the end of January, it will be on the biggest screen in your theater. So go.
Yeah, it's rare that I say that, but I the more I think about it, the more I like it. So thank you guys so much for being on. I love chatting with you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Obviously, I love having you both on. Pat, how can people connect with you? I know that you have some ways that they can do that.
Yeah, well, I am currently an editor for a nonprofit organization called Power to Change Students. We got a website, p2c.com/students. There's a lot of cool written content on there that I manage, write some of. I'm also going to be at a conference in Richmond Hill, December 28th to the 31st. I'm going to be doing a talk on the gospel and movies and how you can be a more active consumer rather than a passive one. So I'll be doing a little bit of a workshop on that. If you're a student and like that kind of stuff, go to our website. And if for some reason you're near Richmond Hill, go there too.
You did not tell me this. I didn't even know you were doing that. That's cool.
Oh, yeah, it's just a small thing. It's a workshop. So we have like 90 workshops at our conference. It's one of those like choose your own adventure type things where there's a million different options and you can do whatever you want. So we're trying to do more more creative stuff like this and kind of appreciating the arts a little more.
Cool.
Yeah, so I'll be doing that.
Oh, that's great.
Well, that's awesome. And for those of you at home, a reminder that you can find us on iTunes, Podomatic, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. If you go to the podcast page on screenfish.net, you can download Fishing for More, which are small group questions that you can have for the people you see the movie with and you want to talk about it with them, maybe help frame your conversation. We want to make sure that you guys are set up to do that as well. The podcast will be back next week. We have a special non-canonical non-episode, I guess. We have a special coverage of the Pomegranate Film Festival here in Toronto. That'll be out next weekend. And look for our interviews with actress Lois Smith and Bruce Greenwood. Also, if you're Canadian and you are coming to the end of the year and you think, hey, I've got this money and I really want to donate it somewhere, you can do it to Screenfish if you'd like. We are tax receivable now in Canada. If you're as excited about what we do as we are, then you can partner with us that way as well. Once again, guys, thank you so much. For you,
thanks, Dave.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
For you at home, as always, we started the conversation. This was Screenfish.
What in the heck is going on?
What do you mean?
I'm here, then I'm gone. I'm here, then I'm gone. I'm here, then I'm gone. I literally was on a whole 5-minute rant and didn't realize I was recording this.
Patrick's been talking that whole time, but apparently so is Chris.
Maybe comedy. You're gonna have fun editing this one.